A reading from Joshua. Joshua called together all the tribes of Israel at Shechem. He called in the elders, chiefs, judges, and officers. They presented themselves before God. Then Joshua addressed all the people. This is what God, the God of Israel, says. A long time ago, your ancestors, Terah and his sons Abraham and Nahor, lived to the east of the river Euphrates. They worshipped other gods. I took your ancestor Abraham from the far side of the river. I led him all over the land of Canaan and multiplied his descendants. So now, fear God. Worship him in total commitment. Get rid of the gods your ancestors worshipped on the far side of the river Euphrates and in Egypt. You worship God. If you decide that it's a bad thing to worship God, then choose a god you'd rather serve and do it today. Choose one of the gods your ancestors worshipped from the country beyond the river, or one of the gods of the Amorites, on whose land you're now living. As for me and my family, we'll worship God. The people answered, "We'd never forsake God, never. We'd never leave God to worship other gods. God is our God. He brought up our ancestors from Egypt and from slave conditions. He did all those great signs while we watched. He has kept his eye on us all along the roads we've traveled and among the nations we've passed through. Just for us, he drove out all the nations, Amorites and all, who lived in the land. Count us in. We too are going to worship God. He's our God." Then Joshua told the people, "You can't do it. You're not able to worship God. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He won't put up with your fooling around and sinning. When you leave God and take up the worship of foreign gods, he'll turn right around and come down on you hard. He'll put an end to you, and after all the good he has done for you." But the people told Joshua, "No, no, we worship God." And so Joshua addressed the people, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen God for yourselves to worship him." And they said, "We are witnesses." Joshua said, "Now get rid of all the foreign gods you have with you. Say an unqualified yes to God, the God of Israel." The people answered Joshua, "We will worship God. What he says, we'll do." Joshua completed a covenant for the people that day there at Shechem. Hear what the Spirit is saying to God's people.
God, grant us serenity to accept the things that we cannot change, courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Please be seated. This is another week where Jesus tells a really disturbing story, and I'm preaching on the Old Testament. The other clergy and I, Nancy and Joyce and I, got together and decided that since we'd been working through Exodus, we were going to continue until Advent, which is in 3 weeks, to go through this story of the people of Israel as they head into the Promised Land. And so we are going to talk about Joshua today. But I love the bridesmaids and the oil story because it's kind of ridiculous. And if you want to talk about it afterwards, please come see me. And I'm glad to have a conversation with you about this fantastic parable. And I'll preach again on it in 3 years, so don't worry. We'll do. It always comes around every 3 years. I love this reading from Joshua because it scares us a little bit about who God is and who we are in God's eyes. But I get that. You know, something really crazy happened to me when I was 13. I wouldn't wish it on any of you, but at 13 I figured out that my parents were real human beings. It was an awful experience, an awful revelation to find out that my parents actually had feelings and thoughts and weaknesses. They weren't just perfectly strong beings that knew right all the time. Even when they were wrong, they were right. And every decision came from this perfect place and everything. And there was something, but this is the scary thing. I didn't realize that because they made a bunch of mistakes. The way I figured out my parents were human is, this is crazy. My dad and I were having these conversations. We were on a road trip together, and he started to tell me stories about his life when he was younger. You'll never believe this. He had a life before I was born. No, seriously, guys, this is real. Before I existed, my parents actually also existed. No, it's true. And had things that they did and cared about. They had lives that didn't have anything to do with me. 25 years later, I am still reeling from this revelation. Finding out as we were driving along in the road, the back roads of New Hampshire and Massachusetts and Connecticut, we'd drive through these, and he started telling me these stories about what it was like to be in high school and college, and my dad traveled with the USO during the Vietnam War, and he also served during the Vietnam War, and he would tell these stories. And it was the first time I realized that I was just a part of a person's real, actual, true life that belonged to them. And once I figured that out, all bets were off. Because once I figured out that he was a real person who existed outside of my life, I had to treat him differently. All of a sudden, he was a person and my mother was a person. They were both people who had dreams and hopes and desires and fears and strengths and weaknesses. Some of them had to do deeply with me, many of them not at all connected. When my parents split up, it opened up, it broke that open for me. It created spaces where I had to get to know them as them. Because they, after years of trying to be married to each other and years of raising three boys, and trying to make a living and do the whole thing, they were in a place in their lives where they were all of a sudden trying to figure out who they were all over again. It was beautiful midlife crisis stuff right out of a book. But for the kids of that, one of the things that happened was we had to recognize the truth about our parents. That our parents weren't just unending sources of love and money. Right? Because your parents could say, we can't afford that all day long. But that's still where the money came from. And your parents get grumpy and frustrated and all sorts of things, but any kind of concept you have of love so often comes from there. I had to stop acknowledging, seeing them as just symbols or fountains of something, sort of, you know, this sort of just blank slate of whatever I want it to be, and I had to recognize their humanity, their dignity as people. What does this have to do with the people of Israel as they enter the promised land and are meeting and Joshua is leaning over and talking to them and saying, you got to watch out with this God we've got. What's it got to do with that? It's got everything to do with it, because the reality is that we, the Israel of the 21st century, not just the political Israel, but the people, the church, the people who belong to God, those who say we are God's people, we call this our heritage. When God says, I will be your God and you will be my people, we say we're God's people. We so often treat God like a concept, like an idea, like a never-ending flowing sort of source of life and light. And I believe God is an unending source of light and life. But we tend to think that it's all about us and that God is just supposed to be this perfectly accepting and perfectly just Teflon God. The Teflon God who cannot be harmed by us, the Teflon God who cannot be thrown off or bothered by us. And Joshua has a different message. He says, you belong to God and God belongs to you, but God's a God who's been around a lot longer than you. That's how this story starts. He says, remember, this God existed before you did and had relationships and connections and life and love. Before you ever showed up, God was being God, loving and caring and being in the world. And now you're here. And God is for you and about you and with you and loves you. And guess what? There's more to God than that. But he also says something that's really scary to us. He says your actions matter to God. Your decisions in your life affect God and affect your relationship with God. I don't know why that's so scary for us, but it is. Maybe it's scary because we've had people that we've affected before and hurt them, and it scares us how we can hurt others. It scares us what we're capable of doing, and the idea that we could hurt God, does that mean he's still God if I can hurt God? That's scary. Maybe it scares us because every single one of us has been in a relationship of love that has ended. That's scary. If God is a person with whom I can have a real relationship, is there a relationship that could end? I don't like that. Maybe it's scary because each one of us has been on the abused end of a relationship. Each one of us has been harmed or has harmed others, or both. It's a lot safer to think of our God as this sort of broad, faceless concept or source of something, unmoving, unfeeling, un-anything, just love as a sort of overwhelming force. Joshua insists that we recognize a God who has a personality, who has a dignity, who has a dignity, and that we have a responsibility, if we're going to be in relationship with the one who made us, to recognize the dignity of the one who made us, to treat the one who made us as if they exist and matter. Not so that we can go to heaven or be the right kind of people or not break the rules, but because we were actually built for relationship, real and honest and true relationship with the one who made us. And we can't do that if we are not willing to treat that God with dignity, with the sense that they have a life and a yearning. That's scary for us. But I thought God was a God of unconditional love. He is a God of unconditional love. Unconditional love does not mean that God is a doormat or a cash machine or just an unending fount of everything is fine, don't worry about me. Saying that God is a God of unconditional love is not a license to abuse God, your relationship with God. Saying God's going to love you no matter what, and by the way, God is going to love you no matter what, that is the overwhelming testimony of our gospel. The overwhelming testimony of the Christian story is that God is a God who made you for love and about love and with love, and that God will love you no matter what. And it is important for us within that reality to recognize that doesn't mean we just get a blank check to treat God however we want. Any more than we have a blank check to treat our parents just however we want, or our children just however we want, or our spouses or loved ones. Something really powerful and painful is happening in our country right now. People all across the board, especially straight white men, me being one of them, but all across the board are being forced to recognize the humanity and the dignity of others. This question of who's really worthy of dignity and love, of respect and care and human relationship is being brought up. It's being bubbled up. It's sitting right here in front of everybody now. We don't get to turn away from it. Over and over and over again, every man I know, is looking back at our lives and asking the question, have I always treated women with respect and dignity? Am I even doing it right now? Where do I need to look at this about myself? Every man I know is doing this. We're asking ourselves right now as a country, what kind of dignity does an immigrant deserve? What kind of dignity does someone who looks different from me deserve? We're asking those questions. And we're not asking them rhetorically right now. We're asking them like proactively. What does it look like? Are gay people people? Straight people? Trans? Do they get dignity? Are Trump supporters still people? Or are they just a basket of deplorables? Are they human beings? Are we gonna break ourselves up into men, women, this, that, Republican, Democrat, us and them? Or are we going to look at the person right in front of us and recognize the dignity God has given them? The love and the wonder with which each person is made. That is the question at the lips of every person I know, even if we don't know how to say it. We are having a conversation about the dignity and the respect owed to each person. And I believe for the Christian, we can see that written deeply, profoundly in the words we have today in the book of Joshua. Because Joshua is saying, do you really want to be in a relationship with this God? Because if it does, it means you have to recognize God as someone who is a being you can have relationship with, and that means that God has yearning and desires. God has a dignity and is not meant to be abused or mistreated. You got to treat God right. And then Joshua gives them all sorts of commandments or restates the commandments of Moses. And guess what they are? How do we love God? How do we care for God? How do we recognize the dignity, the beauty, and the holiness of the God who made us? Guess what it is? In the way that we treat the people that God puts in our lives. You want to know God is holy? You better treat the person right in front of you as if they are holy. You want to believe God has a yearning and a desire for love, relationship with you, the beautiful one that he made? Recognize the beauty and the loving way that God made the person right in front of you. You want to know if God has any dignity and if you have any dignity as the one God made? Respect the dignity. Look for the humanity and the beauty of the people around you. It's not a trick, and it's not easy. I did CrossFit for a while, not now, as you can see. And I had this coach who would make us do wall sits. Do y'all know what wall sits are? It's like you're sitting against the, like, you pretend there's a chair, but there's no chair, right? It is literally the simplest exercise there is. Simplest. Anyone can understand a wall sit. It's easier than a plank. Planks are hard because you got to like try to like figure out like how to everything. Planks are terrible. I hate them. But that's a whole other conversation. Sorry. Wall sits are super simple. But I had this one CrossFit instructor. He'd make us do them. And while we were doing it, he'd say, it's simple, but it ain't easy. It's simple, but it ain't easy, as we all fell over, right? One after the other. It's simple, but it ain't easy. Love your neighbor. It is actually that simple. You will love God if you love your neighbor, and you will love your neighbor more deeply when you recognize the dignity of the God who made them, that we are made in the image of the God of dignity and love, of respect and care. We will be merciful with one another when we recognize God's mercy, and we will recognize God's mercy when we are merciful towards one another. This is not one or the other. This is an all-encompassing reality. We got a lot of work to do. I know it. Just like the people of God and Joshua have a lot of work to do. It's why Joshua said, "You're not ready for this." Didn't Christine read that beautifully, by the way? It was just like, "Are you sure you want this? You know what kind of God this is? A God who's serious about relationship? Is that what you want?" We don't always want it, but it's what we're made for. We don't always want real relationship, but it's what we're made for. We don't always want to recognize the dignity of other people, but it's who we were made to be. We don't always want to deal with the sacrifice that love requires, but that's what we were born to do. We don't always want to be acknowledging when we're wrong, repenting, saying I'm sorry, and learning how to live more fully into lives of love. We don't want to do that. It's scary, and what will it mean for us? But God has made us people of love, and that's what real love looks like. And by God, we are going to become those people because that is what God has in store for all of us. Joshua's people stand at the beginning of that promised land reality, becoming God's people, and we stand in the same place. We are right on the verge of learning what it means to love and care for one another. And as we begin to do that work, we find out the scary reality that you have feelings, that you have dignity, that you deserve to be respected no matter what, no matter what. And that I don't always know how to do that. And that I haven't always done that. Is that scary? It is. This is why we come back to that reality that we fully and totally and utterly belong to the God who made us in love, for love, and about love. That unconditional love, even when we need to be told how not to abuse one another or abuse God, mistreat one another or mistreat God, that unconditional love stands, that God will never abandon us, never leave us, and that we belong to God fully and totally. That is the basis for the work, the love, and the lives that we live together. We were made for one another. Sometimes that feels like a curse. But the life of the people of God tells us that being made for one another is the blessing, the greatest blessing we will ever know. May we learn together every day how to live fully and truly into that love.